And with me in the KRVS studios this afternoon is Brian Piazza. He is the Director of Freshwater and Marine Sciences at the Nature Conservancy of Louisiana. He's also an adjunct professor at LSU and Southern Illinois, and is here today to talk about a book that was just recently published in April called The Atchafalaya River Basin, History and Ecology of an American Wetland. And it is an absolutely gorgeous book. You've got it there. It is so substantial and solid and looks like your most favorite textbook that you've ever had. Really a lovely book. And I think we should start off talking about the Nature Conservancy first. I think many people know the name and may have read a little bit about it. But tell us about that organization, and then we'll get more fully into your work there.
Great. Thanks. And thank you for having me. I'm delighted to be here. So I work for the Nature Conservancy. We are a global environmental organization. We are in the business of doing conservation. We work, like I said, all over the world. We work in all the states in the United States and 35 countries. In Louisiana, we just had our 25th anniversary. We've conserved and protected a lot of the great places in Louisiana. We actively manage about 35,000 acres in a series of preserves across the state. One of them that a lot of your listeners might frequent is our Cypress Island Preserve. We have a wonderful visitor center there. And if you haven't been there, please come out. And we just had our 55th country represent a person from our 55th country visit our Cypress Island Preserve, and that's at Lake Martin. It's a good time to go now. And other than what we manage, we've helped protect about almost 300,000 acres of special places in Louisiana, and some of those we've purchased and then transferred to the Fish and Wildlife Service or the Department of Wildlife and Fisheries. And so a lot of the areas that we have, the public areas in Louisiana, the Nature Conservancy has had its stamp on over the last 25 years.
And so it's an active organization. You're not just into real estate collecting acreage. You direct the Freshwater and Marine Sciences, which helps this active management of all of the acres and acres that you all have in Louisiana. Tell us about that field. What do you direct? What is your job?
Yeah, that's a great question. And you're right. We don't just purchase land in the Nature Conservancy. We're really about trying to conserve land and also build constituencies for conservation and really facilitate discussions. We work at the government relations level. We work on the land, and we manage land. We also work at the science level. We're a science-based organization, and we take a lot of pride in making sure that all the actions that we take are rooted in the best available science. And so that's really where I come in terms of freshwater and marine science. You know, we're active in coastal restoration here in Louisiana. We're active in freshwater and trying to understand our freshwater resources in Louisiana better, working to try to, understand the Atchafalaya and the trajectory that it's on. And everywhere we work, we try to root our work in the science, in the best available science. And so that allows us to make a lot of really close partnerships with universities. And in fact, I work on campus here with professors on campus, Whitney Broussard, Carrie Smith. They're doing a fantastic job with interdisciplinary education of students and trying to bring science into design and sustainable building. I absolutely love working over here on campus. I also have really strong partnerships at LSU, at Nicholls State University. And our staff, you know, we try to facilitate educating students and bringing them on and letting them show why their science is important and doing science and letting them get their science applied to a direct conservation outcome on the ground. Mm-hmm. And they really like it. And I think it makes for a better student and down the road, a better trained scientist.
So you have a many, many faceted job, but as you said, is very seriously rooted in science.
Yeah.
And you're very qualified for that. You didn't just answer an ad in the newspaper to do this job. You do have your PhD in oceanography and coastal science, and you have a master's actually in wildlife science. Both of those are from LSU.
Yes.
But you're originally from Wisconsin.
I am.
So I think some of our listeners might think, oh, that's a lot of snow up there, huh? So how did you get interested in wetlands and creatures that live in places that never see the snow?
Yeah, like a lot of young people, I got introduced to the outdoors in general by my grandfather, and he was a hunter and a fisherman, and I took to it like a duck to water, I guess, you know, and I just really fell in love with the outdoors, and I went to the University of Wisconsin, Stevens Point. And like I was telling you, it's about the same size as this campus. And when I come on this campus, I get that same feeling that I had when I was on campus up at UW-Stevens Point. And I started out as a forestry major, and I took Introduction to Zoology in it, and it just blew my mind. And I said, you know, I like forestry, and I love this biology. And, man, I'm seeing these wildlife students, and they're combining all of this stuff together, and it really struck me as interesting. And so I changed to wildlife management and biology, and then I started doing a lot of internships and getting experience. And I actually came to Louisiana as a junior in college in the summer, and I worked.
You did your year abroad here?
yeah, my year abroad, and I actually I came down, and I was working on. Our state director for TNC is Keith Uchley, and I was actually one of the students who worked on his PhD project. And then I went back. I got along, of course, very well with him, and he took me to the Silver Moon Cafe in Baton Rouge, and I ate some of the best food I'd ever eaten. And I said, God, I got to come back here. And so I went back home, and the next summer, I went up to Delta Waterfowl Research Station, and a lot of people know about Delta Waterfowl here in the South now and across the country, and they're a really good organization, and I was doing research up there, and I got a phone call right before I was leaving, and I was actually working for a professor from LSU up there, and I had applied to graduate school at LSU, and I got a phone call when I was about to leave. I was outside of Winnipeg, Manitoba, when I got the phone call, and they called me up there. And this professor from LSU said, would you like to come to Louisiana and live out in the marsh in a place called the Atchafalaya Delta and study colonial wading birds, so herons, egrets, and ibises? They have a lot of nesting rookeries out there, and I think there's some really interesting questions. And I said, wait a minute, I can live out in the marsh and study birds. And I was a guy at Stevens Point that loved wetlands and loved ducks. I loved duck hunting, and I always wanted to come to Louisiana anyway because I had read about the great duck hunting
and
here.
And you'd had that great food.
And I had that great food, and, you know, I was hooked, you know. And so I got in my old Ford Ranger pickup truck, and I think it was leaking more oil than using gas, and I drove almost straight. I drove, stopped home, and then I drove straight to Louisiana, and within a couple weeks of being here, I was on a boat, and I'm going down the Atchafalaya River, and I'm living out in the marsh and studying wading birds. And to me, I was always a person who loved wide open spaces, as so many do. But I have found, like, wide open spaces that were marshes, and I thought I had, you know, died and gone to heaven, and I've been here now almost 21 years.
What an incredible call. So
yeah.
you got that call, you stopped off at home to pick some stuff up, and you headed down.
And I literally drove straight down here, and I parked I got kind of oriented at LSU, and I drove, and I left my truck at Berwick, Louisiana, and I got on a boat. And I've been working in the wetlands of Louisiana ever since.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
And this book is the result of all those 21 years,
yeah.
Everything that you've been feeling and learning, measuring out there in the basin.
Yeah.
I want to tell you, if you're just tuning into this amazing story, my guest is Brian Piazza. He is the director of freshwater and marine science at the Nature Conservancy in Louisiana, also adjuncting at LSU in Southern Illinois, has just published a book called The Atchafalaya River Basin, History and Ecology of an American Wetland. So along the way, you did get those degrees at LSU. You have your PhD, but you continued working the whole time in these beautiful, wide open spaces. So as director of freshwater and marine science, that puts you in a lot of situations with this acreage that you all manage. But you have managed to, circumnavigate the entire basin, the Atchafalaya Basin, for this book. When did you first get the idea to do such a comprehensive book on the basin?
Well, it actually started when I was at LSU before I came to the Nature Conservancy, and I had an opportunity to come to the Nature Conservancy. And one of the things we really wanted to do was understand better the Atchafalaya Basin. And so I started trying to compile sort of – we were really interested in what is the state of that river basin scientifically, so ecologically, and what trajectory is it on? And so I started compiling information, and I started talking to colleagues. And you have to remember, I had been working in policy development, education, academic research, so I knew a lot of people around. And so I started calling up people and talking to people and compiling information. And a lot of this stuff, you know, I had worked at LSU. They have done a tremendous amount of fisheries research in the School of Renewable Natural Resources where I was working, and I had actually worked with them a little bit. And so I started compiling everything, and I started looking at it, and I said, wow, here's a good review paper. Here's a good review paper. But in terms of the state of the basin, nobody ever had compiled all the different disciplines together to tell the story of the basin through the lens of science. You know, we hear about here the Atchafalaya Basin, the great cultural work that's done here in Lafayette, and we hear about in terms of, you know, its music and its culture, and but nobody had ever compiled all this science to say, how does this story compare to these other stories? And so I started doing that. And I actually picked the part that I knew the least about, which was the geology, and I got very interested in it. And I, you know, this was overwhelming. So I started writing about the geology and compiling things, and I thought, that's cool. That's really cool. And I put that aside, and then I wanted to know about the nutrients and things because I didn't know much about that. So I started researching that and writing. And after I kept doing this and doing this and doing this until this volume of work was in front of me, and I had a draft of the book, and it was sort of a, I guess you call that an organic process that happened. And then
that's a good word for something like the basin, isn't it?
Yeah.
Very organic.
Yeah.
Well, how long did it take you to compile all of this information? I mean, you've been working in the basin for a long time, but how long did you work on this book?
Well, so I started it probably in the late summer of 2009, it came out, you know, this April, but we had, you know, the oil spill and things which took me off of it. So for periods of time, and so I would go in fits and starts, but probably about 3 years of compiled all that time
together.
Intensive
work on the basin.
Yeah.
Well, give us your overall impression, because you had all these bits and pieces, the geology and the different aspects of the basin and things that you had studied in your particular academic fields. What image did you come up with at the end of it? What was perhaps most surprising to you about this area that you had chosen to write about?
Well, one thing that wasn't particularly surprising to me, but it became very, very clear was how important the Atchafalaya Basin is, not only, you know, to us regionally, locally here in Louisiana and regionally, but, you know, this is a globally important wetland for birds. And it is the largest block of forest in the lower Mississippi River Valley. And the largest riverine swamp in North America. It's got the last huge stand of coastal cypress left, and that's very important. And think about our culture and the cypress tree. You know, it's inextricably linked. And so that was something that I learned. And then, you know, just the culture of the basin permeates all over this part of the world, right? And I always tell people, and it might sound a bit corny, but I think the basin really is the heartbeat of the Cajun culture. It's what makes South Louisiana and this part of Louisiana just it's everywhere in our culture. I mean, and people know about it all over the world. Anyone who's come here and eaten crawfish knows something about mm-hmm, the Atchafalaya mm-hmm. Basin. I mean, it's very popular now in our popular culture. And so that was really something that came out to me. There were a couple of things that I learned about that I didn't know, which were really cool. One is that there is what I call a planet Earth scale migration that happens in the Atchafalaya every year. And I learned about it from Raymond Bauer here at UL, Tyler Olivier, who I think has since graduated with his PhD. And Tyler was working on river shrimp for his degree, and also Jim Delahousse. And they taught me about this incredible migration.
And when you say planet Earth migration, you're talking about that series.
The TV show. I always tell people this needs to be on the planet Earth mm-hmm. or North mm-hmm. America series. And it's amazing migration that takes place every year. And it's one of the most little known migrations, and literally a handful of people know about it. But every year when the river comes up in the spring, the female shrimp release, they move downstream towards the Gulf of Mexico, and they release their larvae into the water. And these larvae have to get to salt water within 5 days or they die. And so they drift downstream on the high river, and they get to salt water, and they molt a bunch of times, and they change, and they grow and grow and grow. And then when the river comes down, like it's about to here in the next month or so, and it gets to its low level, you can go out at night, which is what I did with Tyler, and we set up a video camera with night vision on it, and we look down in the water, and there are literally millions of shrimp that are maybe an inch long, maybe an inch to 2 inches long. And they're going upstream on the banks of the Atchafalaya River in the shallow water, and they're all following each other. Now, if you imagine when you watch a show like Planet Earth or North America, and they have that aerial photo of or aerial shot of caribou migrating through the tundra, and
this
they're all
the same thing,
and they're all following each other, and there are thousands and thousands of these things, and they're all following each other in a line. These little shrimp are doing the exact same thing. And it, to me, it just captivated my imagination. It was one of the coolest things I learned while I was writing this book. And Tyler took me out, and now it's to the point where I talk about it and people say, are you going to talk about the river shrimp again?
Because it's
not only a really great migration, but it's also a critically important species to the catfish and the fish in the Atchafalaya River. And it's really interesting because the Atchafalaya is one of the last places that this shrimp has a big stronghold population. It's interesting because its Latin name is Macrobrachium ohione, and that is named after the Ohio River. And somebody...
That's the name of the shrimp.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And somebody said, why on earth would a freshwater shrimp that needs salt water be named after the Ohio River? These things were prevalent in the Red River and the Ohio River all along the Mississippi River. And the reason they think is because, and I learned this while I was writing the book, the reason they think it existed in those places was because of salt deposits. And they think that there were these salty lagoons where the salt water, where these populations would find these local sources of salt. And converse, they think that the science has shown that maybe these populations are gone out of the Red, they're gone out of the Ohio, river, and maybe it's because that salt was mined. Those salty pools don't exist. And also because of all the structures that are in the river. I mean, think of the Mississippi River. We have all these rock structures to keep it a navigation canal all the way up the river. And so it's harder for a little one-inch shrimp to get on the side of the river and go upstream. And so the Atchafalaya has this really strong population of these shrimp. And I just think it's one of the coolest little creatures I've ever learned about in my life. And I think it's just a great story. And
well, I'd like to be there when you propose it to Planet Earth, because I think they would go for it.
Don't you think on an IMAX theater they could make that look really cool? Because I was looking through a little LED screen on Tyler's camera, and I thought it was like the coolest thing I'd seen.
With the music.
Yeah, I have a photo from it actually in the book, and talk about river shrimp, because I think they're so cool.
Well, I think everyone listening can feel your passion about the Atchafalaya and all of its creatures and everything you've been finding there. If you are just tuning again, my guest is Brian Piazza. He has just published his book, The Atchafalaya River Basin, History and Ecology of an American Wetland. He is the director of freshwater and marine science at the Nature Conservancy. So your book is made up of many parts like that. The shrimp, mm-hmm. You obviously have a great love and passion for that particular creature and its migration. But you are covering the basin. You're covering its history. You're covering its ecology. How is the book set up? It's a beautiful book, and you did want to lure people in with beauty as well as all of the science that you're talking about. So what was your thought when you started putting this book together? How did you want people to react to it?
Well, I wanted people, you know, it's a technical book, right? So I wrote it purposely that way. But if you look in here, we have almost 160 photos, diagrams, and graphs and figures and things. And so I wanted the book to be very visually appealing, because I wanted someone who might not be a wetland scientist or a student studying these things, I wanted them to be able to take this book and say, you know, maybe I don't understand something, but if I look through the photos and look at the maps and things like that, I can really get a feel and understand this story through the photos. So I wanted to make a beautiful book. I wanted to highlight and feature Louisiana photographers as much as possible. We have some great photos in here, not only from C.C. Lockwood, but Patty Ardoin from here in Lafayette is in the book. Charles Bush was very generous with his photos, as well as some of our staff at the Nature Conservancy. We have some amazing photographers on our staff, and so I've featured some of their photos too. But the way I set the book up was to say, you know, first of all, what is this place, and how was it formed? Because the geology of the Atchafalaya Basin is really, like the rest of our coastal wetlands, is really interesting. And so I wanted to understand the geological history, because that explains part of where we are now and part of where the basin will go in the future from a developmental standpoint, from geology. This next thing is, I wanted to ask the question, why is the basin important? And I wanted to make that case and let the science make that case. And it did pretty well. So we talk about the habitats, and we talk about the economic and the cultural and the socioeconomic importance, the biodiversity importance. Like I said, this is a globally important wetland. It's a biodiversity hotspot, over 500 species of fish and wildlife in the basin. I wanted to talk about the forests and how important, you know, I talked about that earlier, about these big stands of forest, and this is what's driving this, and that geology and the water flow in these forests and why they make this place so important. So that is what I wanted to talk about next. And the next thing is, I wanted to talk about how the basin is currently managed, because when you're out in the basin, this is 1 million acres. In size. I was just out there yesterday with a gentleman from New York, And I took him out of Bayou Sorrel, and I took him out and drove him around and out to the river. And we, you know, shut the boat off and drifted and talked for a while. And he was absolutely blown away by how big this place is. And I take people from all over the world out here, and there I get that all the time. This place is massive. I never knew. But that system is a million acres, and all the water that comes into it is managed. Because it's managed through the old river control structure. And so I wanted to look at that management and the how the economic development that has taken place in the and using those resources in the basin, what that means for water flow and water management. And then I said, well, okay, so we know that. Now what is the current state of the basin? So using all this science, where is the basin at from a forest perspective, from a water quality perspective, from a fish and fisheries perspective, from a socioeconomic perspective? What does the science tell us? What's the picture it paints for us? And then after that picture was painted, then I wanted to say, well, then what are the steps that the science shows us to move to make sure that this Chafalaya Basin stays here for our children and their children in the future? And so this book's a review of over 300 studies that were done in the basin, and so what's in this book is a case made by the science. So I wanted to give that voice.
Right. And even though you're using words like 300 case studies and science, yeah, and you have a very, very structured book there,
yeah,
the book, again, I have to say, is beautiful. And when you open it up and you flip through,
yeah,
you want to go into it. It is not a book that says keep out or stay away unless you have a science degree. It helps, certainly, but there's so many things that you can get from that book, even if you haven't studied biology or wildlife sciences as you have. You don't have to have that knowledge, although if you do, you certainly can appreciate it more deeply and fully.
Right. Thank you. And I appreciate you saying that. And one of the things we were able to do, and one of the things I'm most proud of in this book, is that it alludes to just what you were talking about. We were able to take, you know, some of the classic diagrams that were done in the Atchafalaya Basin of how of the geology, what makes a delta, and what makes a delta like the Atchafalaya Basin and the Atchafalaya Delta and the Wax Lake Delta, and how do they form? And there were a lot of wonderful diagrams that had been washed out and recopied and scanned, and they were actually useless for, not because their information was bad, but the reproduction purposes. And even for a student or somebody who was, if I showed you this, one of these diagrams, and you know, you can page through, and I showed you this diagram right now, you would say, oh, I get that. And the reason, because we took those old things that had great information and we repurposed them and we redesigned them. We worked with a firm in Baton Rouge, Stun Design. And we said, how can we make these usable again? Kind of like taking old silver, mm-hmm, and polishing it up and making it beautiful, mm-hmm, again. And we used color because in those old publications, color wasn't an option. And so now anybody who even isn't a technical person can look at these pictures and say, oh, so this is how the sand drops out in open water and it moves. And you know, that might be even a more technical example, but that was something that we really wanted to do. But
well,
otherwise,
it's kind of interesting, the page you have open there and several others. To me, it gives me a very warm, nostalgic, mm-hmm, feeling of looking through my favorite science books,
yes,
and my school science textbooks that have these great illustrations and diagrams. But you've kept that feeling in there, and
yeah,
people will feel very familiar when they open these pages.
Yeah, and we use some old maps. And we were able, and they look in the book, we designed them to have, you know, tattered edges and frayed. So when you're looking through, and it is an old map, mm-hmm, but we were able to reproduce those, and we had to do some things, to do that. But that's what we wanted people to draw them in, because one of the things that, you know, I'm very interested in, and what the Nature Conservancy is very interested in, is for people who aren't scientists to realize that science is really important to all of us. It's important to our daily lives, and a lot of people are scared of it, and because it's technical. And, you know, one of the ways that we can help that is to make science more accessible to people so that they're not
–
yeah, and to demystify it, because if it's demystified, then people understand, you know, we're looking at examples and we're trying to use fact and logic and reasoning and the best available evidence to make a decision. And, you know, that decision may turn out down the road to be not the best one, because we may find some new information that says maybe we should change course a little. But instead of saying, well, that was wrong, we can say, well, we use the science.
We know the history.
And we know the history, and we can change our minds.
Well, and you mentioned earlier you were trying to consider all of the different ways that people use the basin, approach the basin on so many different levels, and how you've set the book up and the photographs and the diagrams really speak to so many of those different groups. Even if your interaction with the basin is driving across the interstate over the basin, you will find something very attractive about this book, because even if it's just driving over the basin, we wonder about it, wonder about the beauty, wonder about why it's there, what's north of there, what's south of
there.
That's right. And your book does that, both in photographs, gorgeous maps, diagrams, and you're flipping through it now. And I want to stop on every page to look at some of those photographs. If you are just tuning in, my guest, Brian Piazza, Director of Freshwater and Marine Science at the Nature Conservancy of Louisiana, we're talking about his book, The Atchafalaya River Basin, History and Ecology of an American Wetland. And I think there's something you wanted to make a point about.
Well, you just alluded to it about the importance of it to a number of people. And there's one of my favorite photos in the book is, and I'll describe it to you, but I actually keep this in my office. But if you look at it, there's a gentleman sitting on a floating camp on the porch, and his two daughters are there, and their two dogs, and they got a fire going, and they're looks like their friend is pulling up in a boat, and he works for an oil company. And in the background, there's two gentlemen fishing in a boat, recreationally fishing. And it shows the importance and how rooted to this place people are. And I keep this in my office to remind me that, you know, if we can all work together to make sure that we keep the basin healthy, and that we can have this working landscape where people come together and just love it, and it really is the base of our culture here in South Louisiana. And we can all come together, and hopefully this book raises awareness of the basin, and hopefully it can help us keep it sustainable and around and thriving long into the future.
A book that speaks to all of those populations, and definitely a pleasure for anyone looking through it, no matter what your experience of the basin is. People can just search around to find out where they can find the book. I'm sure, you know, people are good at Googling and searching.
Yeah, and you can also go to nature.org/Louisiana. You can also visit us at nature.org/Louisiana. And I just wanted to say that the listeners, we have a membership. People can join the Nature Conservancy, and your money can go to protecting these great places in Louisiana. And you can go to nature.org/Louisiana.
For more information.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Brian.